But this morning, again, like I said, we're continuing reaching Canaan. Let's turn in our Bibles to Numbers chapter 13, and I want to read 30 through 33. And then we're going to go to Ecclesiastes 11. If you're wondering where Ecclesiastes is in your Bible, it's the white pages that are a little stuck together. But we're going to jump right over there to that part. Ecclesiastes 13 and 30. Now, this is where the people of God have gone to spy out the land. God, Moses, and this is what's beautiful. Where God is leading us, He also provides knowledge. He also provides wisdom. But what should dictate our life is not what we see. What should dictate our life are not the mountains that stand in our way. What dictates our life should not be what is plainly before our eyesight, but what our faith and what God has told us to do. See, God is a God that does not tell us to do something that He is not going to cause to come to pass. Oh, let me just say it this way then. God does not tell you to do something that can't be done.
That's right.
How cruel would it be if the Lord said, I want you to do this, and then it was impossible for you to accomplish it? Yeah. How insane would it be for God to call you to be a parent and then cause it to be impossible for you to parent your kid? You don't have what it takes. No, God has called and ordained you in this life to do things, and you have what it takes, but we're going to have to be like the children of Israel and not, look at all the circumstances and what we're facing, but acknowledge Him on the inside of us. Begin to acknowledge, I can do all things with Christ that strengthens me. I can be a parent. I can have my own, if you're a business owner, I can run this business with the help of the Lord. If you're an employee, I can work as working unto the Lord. So let's read Numbers 13 and 30. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up evil reports of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that is eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature, and there are there we saw great giants, the son of Anak, and some of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. A couple things I want to point out is, one, that it was an evil report. Why was it evil? It was against what God said. It was against what the Lord had spoken to them. The call of God that He put on their life, everything in the natural looked against it. Now, I do want to say this too. They said, when they looked at themselves, they said, we are grasshoppers in the sight of God. In the sight of the Canaan people. Not only were they grasshoppers in their own eyes, but they said they were grasshoppers in Canaan's, in the giants. In their eyes, they were small. But I do want to point this out. As we study the Word of God, we actually find out that the people in this land were afraid of Israel. They were absolutely, it said that they knew from the moment Israel showed up on the map that they were scared Israel was going to come in and take over. The only people who were not convinced that they could overcome the land of Canaan, that they could overcome those people, the only people that were not convinced were the Jewish people, the people that God called them to do it. Everyone else in the nation feared Israel, except for Israel. Israel saw themselves as weak. Israel saw every reason why they could not accomplish it. They looked at the giants. Now, this is what's crazy. Israel was 1 million+ people. They're in the desert, and everybody's afraid of them, that they're going to come in and take the land. And the only people who are convinced they can't do it is Israel. When God calls us to do something, He gives us the ability to accomplish it. Now, have you found Ecclesiastes? That's where we're going next. Ecclesiastes 11, and we're going to read in verse 4. It says, he that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the cloud shall not reap. Now, God's Word translation puts it this way. Whoever watches the wind will never plant. I like that because it's kind of funny to say, watch the wind. I mean, we use that terminology, but you can't see the wind, but you see the effects that it has. And so it says, for whosoever watches the wind will never plant, and whosoever looks at the clouds will never harvest. There's a fight this morning, and that fight is for your faith. We look at the parable of the sower, and it says when the word is planted, immediately the fowl of the air come in to steal it. The enemy comes in to steal the word. Now, the way that looks may be in a million different ways. And, you know, I remember talking to my mother about this, and other people I've talked on this subject, but I remember talking to her, and I'm like, you know, Mom, the enemy doesn't care about how much money you have in your bank account. Could care less. Enemy doesn't care if your family goes to church or not. Doesn't care if everything's easy for you. Has no concern about that at all. But what the enemy is concerned about is, do you believe the word? And the enemy will attack anywhere to try to steal the word. In your marriage relationship, in your friendships, through anxiety, through depression, whatever it is, doesn't give a rip. The devil doesn't care if you live a good life as long as you don't operate the word, as long as you don't spread the kingdom, as long as you don't do what God has called you to do, as long as you don't mess with his kingdom. Doesn't care, but he'll use any target. Your kids, your relationships, your business, your finance, doesn't matter. He doesn't care. But what he cares about is, will you operate in the word? So when we go through an attack, sometimes we look at what we're going through and we think, you know, why am I going through all this? It's about the word. The true reason behind your attack is not because you got a raise at your job. The true reason behind your attack is not because all of a sudden you started doing well. The true reason behind your attack is that if you continue on the path you're on, you're going to be unstoppable. If you continue on the path that you're on, you're going to spread the kingdom. If you continue on the path that you're on, you're going to do great and mighty things. You're going to be convinced that with God, all things are possible. And so the enemy has to stop you now. It's got to make you look like grasshoppers in the sight of your mountain. But this morning, it may be true that you look at your mountain and you are tiny. You may look at what you're going through and you are tiny. You may be weak compared to the strength of what is against you. But the good news is this morning is where you are weak, he is strong. And you don't have to hold everything up. You don't have to make everything come to pass. You don't have to do all the work. I'm not telling you to sit on your couch and eat Cheetos, which those are a good choice to eat, or Doritos. Those are good. But I'm not telling you that's what you need to do. But what I am telling you what you need to do is trust God. And if there is something you need to do, he'll make it plain to you. And trust that the Lord will speak to you. Trust that the Lord will lead, guide, and direct you, and you will follow him. Trust that you hear his voice. Trust him. And see, you know, I think a lot of times we put our trust in our own selves. We put our trust in our ability to hear him. And you do have ability to hear him. But put your trust in that even if your ears are not hearing correctly, that he'll speak loud enough through all the noise and the distraction for you to be able to hear. It's not in your ability to hear as much as it is in his ability to speak. Let's get our trust out of our own self and our trust in us doing things right, which I believe you need to do everything right that you can. But get your trust out of you and put it in him. We're like, everything seemed to go wrong. I've done everything I know to do. Trust the Lord. And put it in his. I've let the Lord down. I've heard that one many times. You were never holding him up. There's not one scripture that says, in my hands I lifted up the Lord. No, it's in his hands you are. And so when we say, I let God down, you were never holding him up. When you make a mistake, you did not, you know, destroy God's plan for your life. You may say, you don't even know all that I've done. You're right. And unless you want to tell me, really, really want to tell me, I'd prefer not to hear it. But you can still pick up right where you are. You have to trust the blood. You have to trust redemption. You have to trust righteousness. And you have to trust your relationship with the Father. His redemption, that price He paid, is stronger than your mistake. It is stronger than the time that you failed. It is stronger than the years you lived outside of the plan of God. It is stronger. It has the ability to pick you up right now. As long as you have confidence in God, He will place you in your spot. And you will pick up right now and accomplish everything God has for you. Turn everything around. Start to cause you to be in the place you're supposed to be. Let's have the faith of Caleb and say, I'm well able to do what God has called me to do. I'm well able to take the land. I'm well able to do everything God has for me to do. Now, when your spirit decides, I'm going to do what is right, your mind is going to find every reason why you shouldn't. It's cold. It snowed yesterday. My bed is so warm. See, I'm not talking to you. You're here. I'm talking to people that didn't show up this morning. But, you can tell them about it later. Send them a text message. Pastor was talking about you this morning. But if you look at the wind, you're never going to plant. You look at the clouds, you're never going to reap. You know, in Florida, now the planting time, Florida's where I grew up, right? The planting time is different than up here. And so my grandfather always would plant potatoes Good Friday. Didn't matter if it was cold. Didn't matter if the weather was right. When we planted potatoes, it was Good Friday. And if you looked at the weather, sometimes in Florida, short sleeve weather, wonderful. Now, y'all would mock Florida's long sleeve weather. I understand that. I've acclimated. But I remember when 70 and the wind is blowing, it was chilly. You know, I remember that. My mother, this is so, it's true. It's so true. I know y'all laugh at that. But I remember one of my first years up here and acclimating to the winter. And I was going to go home to see my mom. And she says, she's like, Tim, when you come home, you bring your sweaters. You hear me? I know it says 70 to 75, but in the morning, the wind blows and it is cold. So you bring your sweaters. And I just remember telling her, I'll be fine, Mom. I'll be fine. And so if you pay attention to the wind, if you pay attention to the clouds, it'll be time to plant. And you'll wait because of the forecast. God may speak to your heart to witness to somebody, to tell them about the Lord, and you'll look and say, well, I don't know them. What if they reject me? And see, we're focused on us, the way we feel, the way the wind is blowing, the way the clouds are covering. Instead of knowing from the Lord, it's time to plant, it's time to reap. And God will lead, guide, and direct us, and we must trust Him. We must trust Him. And let's say somebody does reject you or reject the message or doesn't want to hear it. Well, at least you planted a seed. There are many people who need a seed planted in their life hundreds of times, or at least one seed and watered constantly before they make that decision. Hebrews 7 and 15 says this. For that which I do not want. For what I would, that do I not. But what I hate, that I do. Now, I believe the Passion Translation makes it a lot clearer. Now, who is this written by? My little Bible students. Paul. They think it's Paul. Most people believe it's Paul. Now, listen here. In the Passion Translation, it says, I'm a mystery to myself. I think that a lot of times about myself. I just drag that person out. There are times that I look at myself and I don't know why I am the way I am. Okay, you're just agreeing with me because not that you think that about me. You think that about yourself. Okay, ushers, leave them alone. I remember there was one time I was up here for a while in Wisconsin and started hanging around Wisconsin, and Wisconsin people became normal to me. Yeah. Y'all were a strange group of people until I, you know, got used to you. You talk different, you act different, you do things different. I mean, you even use, you know, our hunters use cardboard as insulation in a tree stand. Crazy stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was weird to me. And you embrace the winter. You drill holes in a lake and sit on frozen ice to fish. Yeah. Instead of what God meant for people to do, you could look at his creation and see that during the snow in winter, birds go south for the winter and then back up north for the summer. But not us, not Wisconsiners. We embrace it. We go outside with boiling water, throw it up in the air, and it just turns into a mist. And we laugh, and we think that's normal. That alone, the fact that you throw boiling water in the air and it never hits the ground, is enough to tell us that we should not be outside. If that's not a clear sign that we should not be here, nothing ever will be. But I remember when Wisconsin became normal to me, and I started looking at what I enjoyed, what I, you know, how I acted, and I just thought, why am I so weird? Why do I act this way? Why am I like this? Why do I say stupid stuff when, you know, I get nervous? Why do I make jokes at inappropriate times? Why do I do this? And then, you know, my mother called me and she talked to me for a little while, and I'm like, that's why. That's why I was normal back in my environment, and I'm out of my environment. And so, you know, sometimes you could be a mystery to yourself. Why you act the way you do, why the decisions you make, the way you talk, the way, you know, the conversations you have in your head, the arguments you win in the shower. I mean, all these weird things that you do. You may be a mystery to yourself, but the good news is, it so was Paul. He stated here, I am a mystery to myself for what I want to, for I want to do what is right, but end up doing what my moral instincts condemn. And I'm going to tell you something. The people of God can make mistakes, but we can get up and we can move on. And those mistakes never define us. You are not your mistake. You are not the problem that you faced. You are not the problem when you made a statement, when you did something that was morally questionable. You cannot allow that to define who you are for the rest of your life, because that is not you. Amen. To your own self, you may be, it's a mystery why I acted that way, why I did that. I have no understanding why I did that stupid thing. I even knew it was wrong the moment I got into it, but I still did it. The good news is that does not condemn you. That does not hold you forever. You're able to get up. You're able to, 1 John 1:9, ask God for forgiveness, and you're able to move on and out of that mess, because that's not even who you are. And honestly, if you thought about it and sat there, the world will accept that's who they are. And you even knew it's not you. You know, and you have this message and this dialogue on the inside of you that you're wondering why you even did it, and you know that's not you. You wouldn't have that dialogue if it was you. If it was you, you would just accept it. That's who I am. But do not listen to the world. God has created you for such a time as this, for a purpose, for a land that flows with milk and honey, for a land where we do things God's way, for a land that we're not walking through a desert, no more dry places. We're in the place we're supposed to be. We are in Jehovah Jireh, the God that provides. That is his will for our life, And that's what we're going to walk into this morning. Oh, but if you're looking for a reason not to sow, you'll find it. You know, how this works in our life is that we have a word from God. We know what to do. We know how to act. We know the call that's on our life. But the way that this manifests in our life is that all of a sudden, before anything ever happens, God speaks to us. We feel a leading to follow Him. We know a call that's on our life. And all of a sudden, our mind makes a conclusion. We make a conclusion, whether it's possible, whether it's not. And then we look for evidence to support it. And our mind works better than any computer out there. Faster than Google can find your results. And better than the FBI. Or your ex-girlfriend. They will find all information. And they'll have it all out there. Our boyfriend, whatever you have. And we will come to conclusions while we can't do it. And we will cherry pick facts. And we will cherry pick situations that are not even happening. But in our mind, they are. In our mind, we'll convince ourselves. In our relationships, we'll carry things. If we were hurt or cheated on or misused or abused, we will hold that and we'll look for every reason why this next relationship is not going to work. And we'll hold all these things and hold things against other people that they have never done. But yet we'll see it so clearly. And it's not even there to see. We'll look at the forecast. If we look at the wind, if we look at the clouds, we'll never sow. We'll never reap. And in our own forecast last Sunday, they were calling for, what was it? 8 to 12 inches of snow. They were calling for 8 to 12 inches of snow. And I'm not saying that we didn't get, I mean, what was it? 2 inches? 3? Maybe? Maybe? And do you know how many people, that was on a Saturday, do you know how many people didn't go to church yesterday, that Sunday? I'm not talking here. I'm saying, let's just think statewide. Southern Illinois to Wisconsin. How many people didn't darken the doors of their church because the forecast called for 8 to 12 inches of snow and they never got up and looked out their window to see if they could get here? Is it possible that God has called us to do some things and the enemy is bringing the wind and the clouds, causing us to look at something and we actually never get up and go outside? That we never do anything because of the possibility of what might come? That snow was never in our future, but many people made decisions based on the forecast. Oh, I believe we need to get to a point where we fire the devil as our weatherman. And we begin to look at what God is calling us to do. Now, I believe there are people who are called here to this church that are not here because of a forecast. I believe there are people who are called into their own ministries that are not in them. Because they look at the forecast. Not the forecast from God. But they look at what might be. What could happen. And they never get up and do what they're called to do. There are people who will never get involved in a ministry, in a church, because of what happened to them at their last church. And they know. And if they didn't have that hurt, they would. But they're looking at past forecast. They're looking at the Farmer's Almanac. Yeah. Farmer's Almanac called for a very horrible winter. Very horrible December. And I don't know about you, but on Christmas Eve, I went walking with no jacket on. It was 65 plus 67 degree weather. in Wisconsin. Yeah. And if I would have listened to the Farmer's Almanac, I'd have stayed inside. I know, but it was beautiful. It was wonderful. And instead of paying attention to what's going on, we're looking at a forecast that will never be in our future. Will never affect us. We're looking at a possibility that will never come to pass. And we're allowing that to dictate everything we are doing. And can I say this too? Maybe the reason why you're not stepping into your spot or into a call of God is maybe because I've offended you in some way, shape, or form. First of all, if that has happened, I'm sorry. I want to tell you personally, it's not my heart to offend people. It's not my heart to hurt people. And I've done it. I'm sorry. If that's you, I could never apologize enough. Thank you. I appreciate that. You can tell me later what I did to you. But I have offended people and never knew it. I've had people tell me one time, do you have a problem with me? And I'm like, no, why? Should I? What have you done? And they're like, well, you didn't shake my hand last Sunday. And that's a reason that should not be. They believed a lie that's not true, that I had something and I avoided them. But then there's people who have real reasons. And again, I already told you I'm sorry. What else can I say? But there are some people who I've truly offended and they just choose to get up and walk on. Because they're not going to let something dictate them. They're going to let God be the dictator. They're going to allow God to forecast the weather. They're going to allow the Lord to tell them when to plant and when to sow and when to reap. But I understand that if you've gone through a storm, I've been through some bad storms. Living in Florida, I went through Andrew. Oh my gosh, that caused, I believe it was $26 billion in damage. Second largest storm to hit the United States cost-wise. Katrina being number one, Andrew being number two. I was in that. It hit Panama City. It went over the bottom of Florida and then turned right up and went right in close to Panama City Beach. I'm very close to that area. I mean, we were devastated. Our roads were washed out. We had to take the back way to school for 3 months. Our roads were washed out. We couldn't even get to anywhere. I've been through some bad storms. I actually have a video. We had a tornado in 1989. I was 8 years old. And it hit our community, June 8th, actually. And it devastated my community. It caused, now we're a small town, a town of about 2,000 people. So tiny. And in that town, it caused $4 million in damage. It was an F2, so that means up to 150 something miles an hour in wind. But I called to make sure, because you know I was 8 years old when it happened. I still remember it very vividly. But I called to get the information, make sure I had all the facts right in my own mind. And I knew her house exploded. It destroyed. It destroyed 19 homes. Not damaged. It destroyed 19 homes. The damage was through the roof of homes. But it destroyed, completely obliterated. Like nothing could live there. 19 homes in my community. So Mr. Ryan, if you could go ahead and play that video. I'm just warning you right now that the volume is kind of low. So just listen really good and you'll hear it.
My name is Michelle Moore and I'm from a little southern town called East Point, Florida. I want to share with you today about a storm in my life that actually happened many years ago, back in 1989 in the summer, June. I lived in East Point, but I worked in a little historical town called Apalachicola, not very far from my house. In fact, only cross a bridge and you're there. But I went to cross the bridge, and when I did, I noticed many people pulled over on the side of the road that were looking at something. And as I got closer and began to look down the river, we had the bay, the Apalachicola Bay on one side and the Apalachicola River on the other side, and a tornado or waterspout, whatever you want to call it. Waterspouts aren't uncommon here, but the size of these were very uncommon, to the point where people were parked on the bridge, scared to pass the bridge. And I watched them cross over the bridge and go down the river. There were more forming, so I turned back around and went back to Apalachicola, afraid to pass the bridge. The bridge takes over 5 minutes to pass. It's a very long bridge. And when the weather calmed down, and it did, it actually turned out to be beautiful weather and not very long time. So I crossed the bridge and I came home. I was sitting on my couch going through some bills because my husband and I were planning on going vacation the next day. My husband was outside working on our front porch. The weather, like I said, was beautiful. And my husband came in because he said the weather was starting to turn bad again. And when he came in, he was standing at a large glass door that stood between the outside and our interior door. And things began to, I began to hear things hitting the home. And at the time, I just thought it was hail, since I grew up north and experienced hail a lot, and I didn't think anything about it. But I told my husband it would be best if he walked away from the glass door in case it broke, and I didn't obviously want him to be hurt. And he turned around and he looked at me with a very white and pale face, and he said, "That's not hail hitting our home. It's bricks and it's boards." And I, very confused, still didn't put two and two together, didn't think any more about the storms that I had seen earlier that day, didn't associate them with what was going on at the current time. And I just stood there kind of baffled. And as I did, the noise became louder. My husband ran past me, grabbed me by the hand, and pulled me to what I know now. He was trying to get me to the master bath. We made it to the master bedroom when everything began to change. The atmosphere began to change. It became very difficult to breathe. Pressure. Pressure on your chest made it very difficult to inhale. And it was so loud, we could barely communicate. And I still didn't understand what was going on. I just was in shock. And within seconds, we were in the air. There were refrigerators, boards, bricks, blocks, washing machines, microwaves, pounding on us. There was no pain, probably because of the shock, I'm sure. Just still confused, and I thought that the world was exploding, because my world was. And within minutes, seconds, everything that was a constant in my life was gone. Our home was gone. Our vehicles was gone. Our neighborhood was gone. Many of our neighbors were killed. Some in our front yard. My husband watched one teenage boy die that was caught in the live wires. When the dust settled, so to speak, I stood up and I wasn't able to see. I wore contacts. I was very nearsighted. The contacts had been pulled from my eyes during the storm. And I just stood up after my husband dug me from the debris. I looked around and everything that was there was gone. Again, I thought the world had exploded. My world had. But it wasn't the end. God spared us for whatever reason. He was gracious to us, though we were not serving him. He was merciful. And we survived. With no injuries, no significant injuries, just minor flesh wounds. But in that, I did not know at the time, I walked away with a soul wound that would last for years. And I realized that I had what I know now as panic attacks. I could not function. And I thought I was totally irrational, but they weren't there. They weren't there in the reality of the seed that was planted in my soul during that storm. The seed that brought such fear in my life when other tiny things would happen. The anxiety that followed, the desperation that followed. You can't explain it. You can't make people understand that. But God has delivered me and taught me how to effectively deal with those situations now. He's good and he's gracious and he's kept me. And I don't have to fear the storm, whether it be physical, emotional, spiritual, mental, financial. I don't have to fear the storm because now I serve a God who is a God of the storm.
In that, excuse me. In that storm, I still remember it very clearly. I was 8 years old. Her house is 200 yards from mine. And there's two roads that run parallel. And the people who saw the storm said that it would hit her road, go right up in the air, and come down and hit mine. And as it was traveling down our road, my grandfather was with us, my grandmother and my aunt. And I remember it was beautiful weather. We had a bad morning, and then all of a sudden, it turned beautiful outside. The sun is shining. Everything's drying up. And I was playing outside. And I remember when my grandparents came over, we went in the house and we're sitting down. And mom's got some lima beans with ham hock in there cooking. And they're on the stove. And she tells us that they're done. Their dinner is ready. Our lunch is ready. And we start moving toward the table. And the weather just turned bad out of nowhere. I mean, just all of a sudden, raining clouds, and the TV comes on, and an alert. We don't have the sirens that you do up here. We don't have those sirens. And I remember that the TV turned on, and the weatherman just began to say, "If you have anything outside, go get it now. We have some storms that are reaching the areas." I remember him saying, "Batten down the hatches." And just as soon as he said that, the TV went out. The cable completely went off. And I just remember, you know, thinking that that was strange. And my grandfather was at the door and he looked outside. And my granddaddy very calmly said, "There's a tornado coming." I just remember him being very, very calm. And I remember my father saying, "What?" And he said, "There's a tornado and it's coming this way." And I remember my father screaming, yelling at all the kids, "Get in the hallway." We didn't have no basements. "Get in the hallway." And I remember panicking and getting in the hallway, me and my sisters, and we laid down, and my parents laying over top of us. And I remember it being hard to breathe, but I thought it was just people laying on top of me. And then all of a sudden, this noise in the house began to shake. And I could hear the popping of wood, just the sound. And what I was able to talk to my father, and one of the things he said was that the paneling, the wood paneling, began to push off the walls. That the low pressure in the house and the paneling began to pop off the walls. And he said he could hear the sound of wind coming in and out of the house. And he knew that we had a low pressure and the possibility of the house exploding. And so in the hallway was a door to go outside. He kicked the door. And the door flung off the hinges and just ripped off the side of the house. Our roof was picked up and turned sideways and set back down. Our carport was completely gone. We had a shed outside. It completely took it. I remember I remember going outside and seeing the devastation. We had 2x4s bust through our home, hit where the sink was, and bust all the pipes out, and then go all the way through the house and bust out the other side. Pine straw was stuck in the side of the house like needles. And I just remember the devastation. And she talked about people that would died in her yard. It was her neighbors. And being in a town of 2,000, we knew everyone. And it was a grandmother, a mom, and her son. Now, the good news to that side of the story is that was a Thursday. Sunday, the grandmother, the mother, and the son went to church. And they gave their life to Jesus. They went down to the altar and confessed Jesus as their Savior. I mean, moments before they walked into eternity, they made the right decision. And that I'm thankful for. And when she talked about the live wires, when their house exploded, the house that they were in that exploded, they went in the air. And the son got caught in the telephone wires. And it was devastating. It was absolutely devastating. And I've been through storms in my life. And I know that you've been through storms. And yes, maybe you've been through bad weather, but you've been through the storms of life. And what most people don't tell you is that when you've gone through a storm like that, it's over. But it rages on. The wind blows and you take notice. A drop of rain, and all of a sudden, you're looking. You're sleeping in the middle of the night, and you wake up wondering what that noise was. Is there another tornado coming through your community? And so when you've experienced, whether it is emotional pain, whether you were abused, it doesn't go away immediately. It has the ability to stay there. And she talked about the panic attacks that she used to have. One of the things that's not in the story that she told me privately was one day she was driving. And she said the weather was fine, but she had a panic attack about the storm. And she pulled over. And she said she laid in her seat crying and screaming and holding on to the seat. And she said she heard a voice say, "I'm with you. It's okay." She's not saved. In her words, "I'm living for the devil and I'm doing a good job at it." The mercy of God goes beyond anything we could ever think or imagine. And she said that day she was delivered from her panic attacks and never had one again. And she got saved 7 years later to the day. To the day. She was explaining to somebody what happened and that she heard this voice out of nowhere. And someone explained to her, "Do you know what that voice was? Who that voice was?" And she responded, "I had nobody in the car with me." And they're like, "No, someone has always been with you." When their house exploded, and I mean it exploded, there was nothing left. The frame, they lived in a trailer, and the frame flew in the air. She says she remembers looking and things just hitting her. But the frame caught both her and her husband and pinned them to the ground. When the first responders showed up, no one went over to her property because when they looked at it, they said no one could survive that. Her husband dug himself out. He was pinned to the ground and he was able to dig the dirt out from underneath him and get out. And then he went and dug her out from being pinned to the ground. But the frame is what saved their life. It is what saved their life. It caused them from being slung out into the woods. 3 people died that day. And thankfully, we know where they stepped into eternity. But life must go on. It has to go on. Or otherwise, we're stuck in a place that every time the house creaks or makes a noise, we panic. That in relationships we refuse to allow ourselves to be hurt because we were hurt before. We won't get involved because the last time we did, it almost destroyed us. After we've suffered through a bad storm, the worst thing that we can do is stay in the disaster and in the rubble. The one thing that hurts my heart is to see people who have been set free by the love of Jesus Christ sit down and pay attention to the wind and allow the wind and the clouds dictate whether they sow and whether they reap. If we wait for our mind to come to the conclusion that everything is right for us to invest, to love, to get involved, to volunteer, to be faithful, we'll never do it. We'll never do it. And what we must do is take the report of the Lord and step out and trust Him through it all. Well, what if I get hurt? What if it doesn't go the way I thought it would? Let's never allow that. Let's go straight to the weatherman, tell him, you're fired. He that deserves the wind shall not sow, and he that regards the cloud shall not reap. Don't let an imaginary situation keep you away from opportunities. And maybe right now you're facing something huge in your life, bigger than what you feel you've ever faced. And you're wondering how the outcome is going to happen. What will the outcome be? Can I tell you something? Whether that outcome is good or bad, there's going to be an outcome. Why should you stop and do nothing? Why should you not plant? Why should you not reap? How about picking up right where we are and be faithful now? No matter what happened in the past. I'm going to tell you, when I think about this storm and the devastation to my area, it still causes me to cry. But it does not cause me to go sit in my basement every time the wind blows. It is time for us to pick up. It is time for us to move forward. It is time for us to get out of the desert and enter into Canaan. It is time for us to be faithful. It is time for us to be obedient. It is time for us to pick ourselves up, hear the voice of the Lord, and say, no matter whether the wind blows or the rain pours or whether the wave crashes at our feet, we are planted on the solid rock, which is Jesus, and we shall not be moved. It is our time. I know that many of you, and even the church through the last 2 years, have been rough. But even through that, we have seen the hand of God move. There are people in this church that in 2019 were diagnosed with cancer. And today they stand cancer free. It was a rough journey. You know, what Pastor Tim Jorgensen said last week when he said, everyone, all of Israel, when they heard the promise of the Lord, nobody had a problem with the promise. But when they got in the journey, they didn't like the process. The process has been a little rough. But we are walking into Canaan. We are coming into the place God has called us to be. And how are we going to do it? We're going to take it the same way they took Canaan, by faith. I want to point out that when they entered into Canaan, they still had to fight. They still had problems. Just because you walk into God's best doesn't mean the fowl of the air is going to stop coming down into your field. It means you are going to have to be faithful. And you're going to have to be obedient to do what God has called us to do. Don't give up and do not quit. This is the year that we experience the presence of God like never before. That we walk into His promises and we see testimony after testimony after testimony come to pass. It was in December, the last Sunday in December, I said there are going to be people that are going to pay their debt off in 2020. Somebody gave me a testimony. They said the next Monday, they said they just started thinking about that. I said, that's for me. That's for me. They started thinking about it, and all of a sudden an opportunity came up. And they said, Monday, I wrote a check to pay off all my debt. I believe this is, you. It may not be that visible, but this is the year. This is where we walk into our promises. Let's go before the Lord in prayer. Father.